This hour of the Jason Rant Show brought to you by Robinson Company Structural Moving and Foundation Repair. Thank you so much for allowing us to do this hour of the Jason Rant Show. Let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
So when fringe progressive Seattle activists don't get their way, they have a tendency to act out like a bunch of children. They have fits of anger, uncontrollable anger. Sometimes it comes in the form of protests blocking traffic. Sometimes it comes in the form of insufferable chanting of songs that barely rhyme, aren't particularly creative in any way, shape, or form, but they are kind of fun to watch and point and gawk at and mock. Sometimes they do a little dance. It's kind of adorable. Grown adults doing this. But sometimes it gets dangerous. Sometimes they turn to violence, which is exactly what happened this week, because now they're using Molotov cocktails. A number of reports say that the controversial future Seattle Youth Jail was targeted overnight via attempted arson via Molotov cocktails that actually failed to explode. It's kind of funny how activists don't really have a high success rate in any of this. They kind of screwed up Molotov cocktails, which I don't know how you screw that up unless they didn't put alcohol in the actual glass can. Maybe they, you know what they did? I bet you I know what they did. They filled the bottles with water. And so when they threw them and they lit the one end with the fire, the water in the bottle just put out the fire.
Or some kind of like really organic, like non-flammable alcohol.
It was wheatgrass that they put in it.
O'Doul's.
It was kombucha. Kombucha's supposed to explode. There's supposed to be alcohol in it.
It's funny, this is the type of thing that lands you in youth jail.
Exactly. Although, something tells me there's like, these are all 47-year-olds with lots of cats. Here's Detective Patrick Michaud talking with Cairo 7.
He heard some thuds. He went to go investigate and found that there were some fires and some broken glass on the ground.
Little tiny fires that they ended up putting out with I don't even think they had to call Seattle Fire. Although one of the reports suggested that they did. I think they just used a fire extinguisher to put it out. So it happened around 3:30 a.m. Tuesday morning. So yesterday morning, it happened near 13th and Remington. The off-duty officer heard the four bottles land near the construction offices there, went to explore, and yeah, it wasn't that big of a deal, but it's still arson.
The suspects were able to throw the items and then disappear before the officer was able to figure out exactly what was happening.
So detectives from the arson and bomb squad are now looking over the evidence, and they're trying to figure out who did this. Como's Gabe Cohen went to speak with the No Youth Jail Seattle organization about what happened, and that's the group that has been protesting so virulently against the Seattle jail, which is a necessary one to house, you know, kids who commit acts of rape and incredible violence, because sometimes restorative justice, while we kind of like the idea of not having to throw kids in jail, but sometimes, you know, when you commit a brutal rape, you should probably go to jail. Here's what they told him.
They told me they don't have enough info about the arson to comment, and they wouldn't say whether or not they actually condone the act. But they did say they don't condone violence against people.
Which means they do condone this kind of violence, right? I mean, it doesn't take a lot to read between the lines there. I'd love to talk to any of these people. Maybe we can try to get one of them to come on. Because, you know what? Here's the deal. If violence is being done in your name and you disagree with it, it should be very easy to say, no, yeah, we're against it. We don't like that. He also tried to ask Nikita Oliver, who's the former mayoral third place runner-up, as she tried to run for Seattle mayor. She's one of the lead spokespeople, or she's one of the leaders in this particular movement. She's been calling out this particular youth jail, and she didn't answer any of his questions.
I was hoping to get your thoughts on the attempted arson at the new youth jail location.
I'm here for
No, so you have no comment.
I'm here for something else. I don't want to talk to you. Just say no. Just say yes. You say, I am against arson. Arson is wrong. We have better ways to go about getting our way in the world of politics, and we don't have to turn to violence. We don't have to turn to destruction. We don't have to do something that's dangerous, not just for the people who might just be walking by, but of course the law enforcement agents who are guarding this particular spot. But of course not. They don't believe that, because they do sometimes believe that violence is the answer. Listen to the violent rhetoric coming from some of these folks. It's now starting to manifest itself into actual violence. And you've got some local leaders who egg this kind of stuff on. We hear every single day Trump being called a fascist, Trump being called a Nazi. He's worse than Hitler. Well, if you tell someone someone's worse than Hitler, I can tell you as a Jew, I start to think to myself, that's not good. I should probably fight back against that. You've got people calling Amazon extortionists. When you start talking like that, you appeal to the crazies. That's what we were told by the left about Donald Trump's rhetoric. So why is it that he gets blamed for the violent talk that sometimes manifests itself? But in this case, we've got a whole bunch of progressives who are usually going after Trump for the violent rhetoric, saying, oh, I'm not going to go on the record. I'm not going to dismiss it. But then, of course, you ask Donald Trump and Republicans to dismiss any sort of violence that's potentially done in their name or for their causes. The inconsistency is remarkable. And then you've got, of course, people like Nikita Oliver who are enabling this kind of behavior because these are her people. Unless there was some cover up here that this is a conspiracy to unduly frame them. That's exactly what's going on here. You don't say anything, you enable. And it's one thing to be a pain in the ass and block traffic during, you know, drive times during the commutes. I know that you get your cause, you feel your cause is more important than everybody else's life. But when you turn to this kind of violence that can seriously hurt someone or worse, sorry, you've overstayed your welcome in Seattle. And shame on the people who won't immediately call this kind of nonsense out. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Big picture.
So Thomas Homan is the acting director of ICE, the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And yesterday he was like, yeah, I'm done. I've had it. I'm not going to sit here silently. He was testifying in front of Congress, although when you testify in front of Congress, it's usually the Congress people who just give really, really, really long speeches and then sometimes don't even give you an opportunity to speak. And that was almost the case with Congresswoman Diaz Barragan of California, Democrat, just going after ICE and calling them out for being anti-immigrants just because they decided to, oh, I don't know, do my job.
Now, we love to talk about this issue about the MS-13 gangs. We love to paint immigrants as criminals. That is not
okay,
the complete
fact. Okay,
hold
on, you dummy. MS-13, they are criminals. They are, I just want to clarify. I know maybe we're in this weird world where we can no longer call out actual criminals who cut people's hearts out while they're alive, who lure men into alleyways via attractive women and then kill them with machetes. It's illegal. It's illegal.
And that is very offensive for me to see continuing to happen, is continuing to message this anti-immigrant agenda. There are many of lots of good immigrants. And then I hear this rhetoric, more DACA-like people. Guess what? DACA-like people are the people we need in this country. Mm. They've served this country. They've gone to college. They produce and they contribute to the economy. So to put them into the same category is completely offensive.
No one's putting them into the same category. I don't want more DACA-like people if that means they're coming here illegally. I support DACA students. I want them to stay in this country, and perhaps that puts me at odds with some of you. But I don't want more people, even if they're the good people, quote-unquote, to come into this country illegally because I think we need to reform the actual system in which they come into this country so it's a little bit easier. Now, on Twitter, she retweeted someone giving her kudos for shaming Thomas Homan. But, of course, what she didn't include was his response.
First of all, no one on this panel is anti-immigrant. We're law enforcement officers enforcing law that you all enacted. So to sit there and say that we're anti-immigrants is wrong. We are enforcing laws. If you think it's okay to enter this country legally and they shouldn't be arrested, that's just wrong. The laws clearly state and you enter the country legally, it's a crime. And no one's up here saying all illegal aliens are criminals. A certain percentage of them are criminals. They commit yet another offense after they're here. I've said many times, I certainly understand the plight of these people, and I feel bad for some of these people. But I have a job to do. I have to enforce law and uphold the oath that I took to enact the laws enacted by you, Congress.
Yes. Why'd you cut off the end there?
That's all he says. That's
no,
the end of his statement.
He drops the microphone and he storms out. Why didn't you include that? He used some vulgarity. I think I saw him flip the bird as he was walking out. You should have included that. Is it because it was a little too graphic? So we can we talk about it on the After Show podcast? Which you can subscribe to at ktth.com. Good morning, everybody. Live in the Online Trading Academy studio. The Jason Rand Show. We're all wearing seersucker suits today. It's kind of weird. We just kind of all showed up this way. All pastel colors. If you want to see photos of all of us, you can head on over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/Jason Rand Show. I took a photo of Jacob before he covered up. And it's an embarrassing photo, and we're going to post it on Facebook. If we can just get 10, I like doing this, just 10 likes, because it's something that's really easy to do. We humiliated Darren yesterday. Now, this morning, it's Jacob's turn. Facebook.com/Jason Rand Show. 10 follows by the end of the show, and we'll post the embarrassing photos there and on Instagram. I'm doing a twofer. So Jason Rand Show on Facebook. On Instagram, it's just Jason Rand. State Senator Jim Braun of Centralia, Republican. State Representative Jim Walsh of Aberdeen, a Republican. They're both asking for a special legislative session because they want to tackle the issue of school safety.
I think our focus should be on things we can find a way to agree on, not on taking, you know, partisan stands on one side or the other of particular issues.
Okay, fair enough. That's State Senator Braun talking with our sister station, Kyle Radio. He wants to step up funding of mental health services.
I don't think that legislation alone will fix the problem. I mean, this is a human problem, and we shouldn't pretend that we can fix every human problem with legislation. We can do a lot, and we do agree a lot on things that will reduce the risk, and we should take action on that.
Now, on the other hand, Representative Walsh, he is pushing for funding for a school resource officer program. It would allow trained and certified school staff members to be concealed carry on campus, and that does not have support. Right? That doesn't have bipartisan support. You don't have a whole bunch of Democrats who are rushing to back that legislation. In fact, I'm not even 100% sure what Senator Braun is pushing on the mental health side has bipartisan support. Certainly not enough to justify going into a special session, because Governor Jay Inslee, he didn't directly say no, but the office basically was like, yeah, we're not going to do it. And I think he's right not to have a special session. We don't need one now. We don't. If you have the support, fine. Let's reconvene for a couple days in Olympia, get this passed, and then move on. But the truth is, this would just be a total waste of time. This is a political issue. It shouldn't be a political issue, right, when we're talking about the safety of our kids, but it's inherently a political issue. We've got some really simple solutions that feel like they can get bipartisan support. But I do think it's important before we have that conversation to acknowledge that we do not have a gun violence or school shooting problem in the state of Washington. We don't. Have we had school shootings before? Yes, in limited numbers, we have. But when you look at statistically speaking, we don't have a problem. We want to mitigate the issue as best as we possibly can, and we should have the conversations about how we mitigate it. But let's be clear. In Washington State last year, we only had 686 firearm deaths. Only 216 of them were homicide. Of the 216 of the actual murders, the vast majority of them were bad guys shooting bad guys. A good chunk of those numbers comes from suicide. In fact, when you look at King County specifically, since King County is the most populous county in the state, we have a disproportionately high number of suicides by gun when you look at the national average. Our average here is like 75, 76%. Nationally, it's about 66, 67%. That's insane. Now, we can have that conversation, but that's not a school safety issue. So let's just understand before we go all crazy on this, because I do want to make sure that when we come up with policies, we're not doing it based upon some emotional reaction, and in this case, it would be an emotional overreaction, even though I understand and sympathize with the emotions. We just don't have a school violence problem here. But let's talk about some of the solutions. It seems to me one of them is very easy. One of them is very easy, especially if you already have school resource officers on campus. You have one point of entry. You have one point of entry to get into a school. If you have two resource officers, you know what you do? You have two points of entry. It should be harder to get into a school than it currently is. I can walk up right now, go down the block, there's a school there. I can just walk on in. I can go to any middle school or high school anywhere in Washington, virtually anywhere in Washington, except for some of the private schools, and just go on in. That seems to be a problem, right? And I haven't really heard any meaningful conversation around that. I'm starting to hear it now after the Santa Fe shooting. But why didn't we have that conversation and do something about it after Columbine, after Sandy Hook, after Stoneman Douglas? Instead, you've got the left immediately going after guns, even though in this case there's no gun law that would have prevented it, unless you're just going to want to ban all guns, which some people on the left want to do. And then you force the right to also get political and then defend the Second Amendment. And so then instead of having the conversation about maybe we shouldn't make it so easy to get into schools, you guys are just fighting back and forth about gun rights. Stop making this political, and then maybe, just maybe, you'll find some solutions. But it all starts by understanding we don't need to go overboard yet, thankfully. And we should all be thankful for this, because we don't have a school violence problem as it relates to guns in Washington State. If you want to send me a text, let me know, 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770, the KTTH hotline brought to you by None Better Tax Resolution. Your text at 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show on AM 770, KTTH and 94.5 FM in the Greater East Side. If you want to join the conversation, send me a text message on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline at 1-800-465-8770. Seattle businesses, large and small, have gotten together to gather signatures to put a referendum on the Seattle ballot that would repeal the jobs-killing Amazon head tax that hit certain businesses with a $275 tax per employee. The money would then be wasted by the city council as they aimlessly try to solve homelessness. If you want to sign the petition and learn more, send the keyword head tax. It's one word, no spaces, head tax, to 1-800-465-8770. That's head tax, one word and no spaces, head tax, to the number 1-800-465-8770. We'll go ahead and send you over a link. Businesses that support the repeal, they're now facing a boycott. Though an activist disputes this claim, screenshots actually show a whole bunch of activists identifying businesses that support the referendum. They're ending up on a boycott list that is yet to be fully distributed. A number of businesses have now been called out by a bunch of progressive bullies, including a restaurant called West Seattle's Peel and Press Pizza and Spirits. They're being called out for a boycott. The owner of Peel and Press Pizza and Spirits is Dan Austin, and he joins me now. Dan, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Not a problem.
So congratulations are in order. You have the dubious honor of being named, it seems like, to a local list where activists are calling to boycott you, all because you've decided as a business to back a referendum to get rid of the Amazon tax. How did you know about it?
You know, I actually, late last night, started getting text messages and Facebook messages from people I did not know. Giving me a heads up that on Sawant's personal page that some followers of hers had seen my post, were not happy about it, and started looking for a way to create a boycott list to make sure that the evil businesses like myself did not receive support from their followers.
Well, tell us why such an evil business that you own. Why are you against the head tax?
You know, it's multiple reasons. The main one is that there just seems to be no accountability with the current spending. A lot of concerns and questions about where the money's actually gone. I have no thoughts that there isn't a lot of homeless in the city of Seattle. I deal with it daily, and that some of these people truly do need some help. I just think this is the wrong road to go down to try to figure out a solution to the problem. Going after large businesses that create income, both in taxes and for people to spend to small local businesses, that's the wrong place to go after trying to fund the solutions.
But one would argue then that this doesn't really impact you at all because you're not making $20 million in profit off of Peel and Press or off of Flight Path, the bar you own in Burien. How does this even impact you whatsoever?
Well, the first thing I love about the argument that I hear on that is that everyone always says $20 million in profit from the supporter side, and it is $20 million in revenue.
Exactly.
Which is a completely different number, as you know. I've talked to my vendors. I do not do $20 million in sales currently, and we'll probably never do that in Seattle because I'll never open as many businesses as that'll take to happen here. but all of my vendors pretty much do. So as a small restaurant, I've already been told by the majority of my vendors that their prices will be going up, which means I will pass along as much as I can to my customers through menu increases. Can't pass it all along. So yet again, for like the third year in a row, I will do more in sales and make less in profit. And as a small restaurant owner, there's not a lot of profit in the business. That's not me personally, across all small restaurants. It's a hard business. And this will, again, affect our bottom line.
Yeah, and if it seems like the council makes these policy decisions not understanding any individual industry, it's because they don't understand the industries that they're impacting. They just see business, they see profit, and they see money that they feel like they're owed. And to your point, there really is no policy that they're going to follow up on. There's no efficiency of funding. There is no follow-up. It's just they take the money, they spend the money, the problems get worse, and then they look for more revenue.
Yeah, I mean, if I had an operational issue in my business and I just continued to take more money out of my customers' pockets and provided no better product or continued to have worse service and worse food and worse whatever experience for those folks, I'd go out of business. But since no one on the council has ever signed the front of a paycheck and had that onus of employing people and making sure that you're providing a service that's worth its money, they don't understand that. And so it just continually, you know, we become the open line of credit for city council. Yeah. And they're held with no accountability to actually providing better services.
So
so many small businesses are just incredibly frustrated and finally at the tipping point where we're fighting back.
Well, yeah, and I'm so glad you are, because, you know, I find myself usually taking on positions that the business community I know is against, but they're not willing necessarily to fight it because the hassle of it and the pushback is so significant. And it does feel like there is a little bit of a cultural shift here with the business community just not being okay being abused. But part of that means you're now on this boycott list. I don't know how serious the list is going to become. The intent is presumably to shut you up.
Absolutely. It's to paint me as a negative person, which if you look at my business history, we won the Emerging Business of the Year in West Seattle for the Chamber of Commerce, mostly due to our community give back. We're helping restore public art in West Seattle. We announced a large restoration project last week that I'm spearheading with the West Seattle Junction Association. Work with the food bank on a regular basis, donating my time to bartend all their charity events, and over 2,000 pounds of turkey for Thanksgiving we gave back the families in need last year. And then I'm seeing Facebook posts that I'm somehow a right-wing nut job conservative in Seattle who doesn't care about homeless people. And that is just incredibly infuriating. They want to shut down people, and I believe myself and other folks are going to be the example to try to get us to not fight this. And I don't understand what their concern is about letting the public have a voice in this. The referendum is simply asking.
You know the concern. You know the concern. It's not going to pass. They'll get rid of the head tax. That's exactly the concern.
Yeah. I mean, that's here's the thing. If you're for a piece of legislation and you think it's truly good, go out and sell it and tell the community. Yeah. Really get out there and sell why this is necessary, and sell that this is the best plan and the best option, and that you exhausted other resources, and that you brought people to the table, and you crafted good quality legislation, and they can't back any of that up. And so they know that's going to come out. They've seen the polls. They're just trying to intimidate at this point. And that is the worst style of politics. It's the stuff they scream about from the other side doing, mm-hmm. and yet they're doing the same thing. And quite frankly, they might even be better at it.
Yeah. And I'm glad you're fighting back. And what we can do is to make sure we give you business, because we're not okay with this kind of boycott. So if you're in the West Seattle area, or if you want to make the drive out there, Peel and Press Pizza and Spirits, it's the place to go for really good pizza. The website, peelandpressws.com. And I know you're also the owner of Flight Path, which is a neighborhood bar in Burien. So we want to give you that support, both as customers, but also in the general sense of, yeah, we want to back you because the head tax is wrong. Again, I've been talking with the owner of Peel and Press. His name is, of course, Dan Austin. He's been joining me this morning. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. I really appreciate the time.
Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show, live in the Online Trading Academy studio. We are three likes away from embarrassing producer Jacob with a photo he didn't realize I was taking. I will say this. After I post this photo, if we get 3 more likes by the end of the show, he won't be allowed to go to any more bars on Capitol Hill. They'll just reject him. He can walk in with that little mustache and be like, no, I'm one of you. They're going to say, oh, no, no, no. I know the truth. I know the truth. I saw what you were wearing that one day at work. So facebook.com/JasonRantsShow. Give us a like. If we get just 3 more likes by the end of the show, I think we're going to do it. We will be posting the embarrassing photo of poor producer Jacob. We did just get word that the third lane on I-5 is finally open. There is the overturned truck that happened around 3:30. I guess the driver reportedly fell asleep while driving northbound on I-5 near Federal Way, got into an accident. The truck overturned. There have been no reports of injury, which is why I'm so troubled that it's taken this long. They just finally turned the truck over. It happened at 3:30 a.m. Why does this take so long? If there are no injuries and the truck is the only thing that was damaged, right? Mm-hmm. And presumably a little bit of the asphalt, but it's not like they fix potholes in a meaningful way anyway. Why does it take so long?
How long should it take?
An hour. 1 hour. At 3:30 a.m., I have to assume you always have someone on call, right? To do
yes.
this. Okay. There was no other accident that we're aware of that was this significant.
Mm-hmm.
Send the truck over to right side it up and then move it along. Just push it to the side.
Shouldn't that be first thing? Okay, here's the report. Semi-truck turned over, tow truck.
They can't because they got to do the technical investigation and got to. Okay, fine. That 3 minutes. That's all. I'm allotting you 3 minutes. Push the thing either over to the side, and if you can't get it right side, just push it.
Mm-hmm.
Get a whole bunch of Vin Diesels alongside. You just push it to the side.
Well, just everyone sitting in their cars. Hey, like you could help us make this go a lot faster.
Either you could sit there for hours, or you could just help us push.
That would never happen.
And then I hear thousands of pounds of chicken feathers
mm-hmm.
all over the place. We just spent the last break trying to figure out what we use chicken feathers for. Because
I had no idea.
1,000 pounds. I suppose. I mean, I never really thought about what we eat. A whole bunch of chicken. They mm-hmm. clean it. They take the feathers off.
Feathers for something.
Do you just burn it? No, they use it for everything from diapers and to make boats to the keratin in some of the beauty products you put on your face.
I feel like I'm always surprised at the contents of these. I feel like the only things that fall over, at least in Washington State for some reason, are weird stuff. Yeah, it's like bees. Wasn't there a bunch of fish?
Frozen
parts?
Fish. Frozen fish, feathers? Bees, chicken feathers.
If the feathers are loose, that seems like the absolute worst possible thing.
The photos,
bees were pretty bad.
Oh, bees,
bees
are
the worst.
Bad.
But the photos of the feathers that I've seen on Twitter, and I've retweeted some of them, they're all in clumps.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they dampen or moisten the feathers, but because you got to break it down anyway at some point. So maybe
question.
You do that to put it in to the truck, or you've got to compact it, or they're just all over the way.
And it seems weird to pack a semi full of loose feathers, just like shoveling them into the back.
They might have been loose until you put as many feathers as humanly possible in the back of this thing. But the photos seem to indicate, and maybe because it's just not particularly windy today, because you can just imagine the feathers all over the place.
What's heavier, a pound, a semi truck full of feathers, or a semi truck full of bricks? It's a semi truck full of feathers, I guess. Right,
you did it wrong. You
I
dope.
Know how it works.
No, but you did. Then why'd you fail?
I screwed it up on purpose.
Okay, including your answer.
I know this isn't.
That's
any
it.
Solace.
I'm posting the photo now.
I'm sorry to everyone stuck in this traffic, but it is.
It's getting better.
Bit, yeah,
it is getting better. We've been getting a lot of texts on the Numb Better tax resolution saying, "God, the traffic is awful today." So on I-5 near Federal Way, they've now opened 3 of the 4 lanes that should. At this point, they're getting a lane open every hour and 10 minutes or so. So. Give it another hour and 10 minutes, and you'll be on your way to work, finally. 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages. This story out of South Carolina sounds unbelievable. It's insane. So a dude in South Carolina, he's kayaking down the Aceto River in Colleton County. You familiar with it? Me too. He's sailing? What is it? Kayak? Is it a sail still technically? How do you
kayaking?
If
no,
you're in your kayak,
it's a paddle boat.
Okay, so you're paddling your way down the river, and he ends up getting bitten by a rattlesnake. And the question is like, you're in the water. How did that happen? So he's paddling down. He paddles under a tree. This brutal rattlesnake falls off of a branch into his kayak, which seems rather difficult because you've only got enough room in a kayak for the one dude in the little hole, because it's not a canoe, just a dude in a hole. And the rattlesnake bites him 2 times.
Yeah.
He ends up, I think, getting airlifted to a hospital. He was able to keep the rattlesnake and bring it with him so they can tell what kind of anti-venom to give the dude.
That's the strangest advice that's required is like, if you get bitten by a snake, catch the snake and then bring it with you.
Maybe he gets really tired after it bites you and he can't get away.
It's so difficult.
I'm picturing that this guy is deathly afraid of snakes, and that's why he picked up the hobby of kayaking in the first place, was to be as far away from them as possible. And then one falls on his kayak.
But doesn't it sound a little crazy?
You are fake news.
It's fake.
Is it really?
It's fake! You want to know what happened?
What really happened? That
was the story everyone told all the news reports, and by the way, the cops. Here's what really happened. Family members said Adams, this dude, actually picked up the snake with his bare hands. Adam's cousin, Kyle, said Adams paddled over to what he thought was an alligator in the water, but when he discovered it was a snake, he yanked it into the air. So this dude is an idiot who wanted to go up to an alligator in his kayak.
He's actually better off. I mean, kind of, I guess.
I mean, in theory, you can't get alligator bite medicine.
Well,
he would be the food of the alligator.
I think it's antibiotics, but if you survive the first bite.
The alligator's not taking a nibble. Yeah. The alligator's eating you, and you're done.
He's never had human before. He's like hesitant.
On a diet.
It's the paleo diet. This dude paddled up to an alligator.
What he thought it was an alligator.
That's ridiculous. And I saw a photo of him, and I don't like to put... I am lying. I love to judge people based on their photos. He looks like the kind of dude who would paddle up to an alligator, realize it's a snake, and then pick it up with his bare hands.
And so the whole group, even after he does this bonehead move, agrees to lie to the authorities about the experience?
It's possible that they were also duped, or maybe one person was duped, and that was the only person who talked to the cops at the time. Because they don't go too much into it. I'm picking it up from two different... I actually went to 3 total sources on this story, including Fox Carolina and ABC News. They seem to indicate when he was bitten, he was still... I mean, he's able to talk, so he just lied. He just told them that this was what happened.
I see.
And maybe the person who knew what happened, like originally, they ran to try to get help.
Uh-huh.
And then they didn't get back in time to tell the actual story. And maybe they all just got together. Look, he's an idiot. We got to protect him. He needs to get a job in the future. We don't want to go after him. The dude almost died, though.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like they talk about the ride over to the hospital. They said he kept deteriorating.
Mm-hmm.
This guy, he looked like he was near death because this kind of venom is incredibly deadly if you don't treat it immediately. And so kudos to them for being able to hang on to the rattlesnake, which it was up to 2 feet long, so it wasn't a huge rattlesnake. Usually, I'd be freaked out by a little tiny lizard. You give me a little gecko and I'm done. But because they knew the kind of rattlesnake, they were able to immediately administer the venom or the anti-venom cocktail, whatever it is they give. And so now he'll be okay.
Well, I guess then my next thing is that I'm impressed that he had the foresight in his state of deliriousness of being venom injected to continue life, to avoid the embarrassment.
Yeah, but I don't know if you get immediately sick. I think it might take a few minutes. And so instead of thinking, oh my God, I need to survive, he thought, oh my God, I need to protect myself from the embarrassment of what it is I just did, which would be better from the embarrassment of what he wanted to do, which was go up to an alligator who would likely eat him. Send us your text messages. 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. It's the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. It's